Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use jobs. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello and welcome to episode 80 of the Carpcast. How are we doing, Mark?
I'm feeling good. I'm just sat at home, feet up, after a hard day's work. Turn on the PC, see if there's anything happening in the carpy world, and I see the great big fish is dead.
Yes, fish we spoke about many, many times. A fish I've seen in the water, fish I've seen on the bank. Shout out to Reedy. My man Reedy caught it while we were there, off my spot, of course.
I didn't see it on the bank. That's naughty. You should just keep it in the water, haven't you?
Ah, true, yeah. The fish don't actually come out of the water. It's a saying. Sorry, Luke, you already threatened to break my legs. But famous scarfish, former world record from the Graviers, has died, it appears. I'm only basing this off a couple of Facebook posts that we've seen. One from a guy called John Quinn, who's a friend on my Facebook. It's a picture of him with the magnificent beast, and he's put RIP Scar, a truly awesome beast. So I'm guessing he has heard this from a reputable source. I can only imagine that Luke is inconsolable. He's been extremely protective and borderline paranoid over the protection of that fish for many, many years, and unfortunately fish do die. I'm sure there's a lot of fond memories of that fish for many, many people. So RIP the scarfish. Bit of a sad start, isn't it, Mark?
Clunk. Yeah, I'm sure it's I was just flicking through the map then and booted it with my big toe as I sat back. Like I do most things, but that's many personal bests, that fish, many happy memories for a lot of people. And well, regardless of your experiences with Luke and that, it was definitely a magnificent beast. And did it go over 100 pounds at one point?
I think it was 99, the record. I'm not sure if it hit 100. I think it was due to and kind of never did. It sort of hovered around the low to mid-90s after that for quite a few years. But this John's obviously caught the fish, obviously knows what Luke's like. Refer back to, can't remember which episode that the Graviers discussion was on, but it was a place where you certainly had to walk on eggshells as far as the owner. But even this guy obviously knows Luke and has caught the fish himself. he puts in a comment, "Not good, mate. You would not have wanted to be there when that went down." He also put, imagine how Luke is right now. It's a shame. It's a shame. It's still a cracking fish in there. There's still a nice lake, still an 80-pounder in there. The brown fish, and there is a few 60s, and it's, it is a pleasant place to fish if you don't mind Big Brother watching you every second of every day with cameras and sensors and goodness knows what around the lake. But refer back to an old one. I shan't say too much because I'd be accused of being negative, which I probably am about that one. But what a shame. I was privileged to see that fish caught. It was a sight to see, a 90 pounder in somebody's arms. So there we go. Fishing this week, Mark. I know you were fishing because I came for a look at the dogging spot near to where you were fishing.
I've heard rumours about what you do in your camper van.
I was
flashing your lights down dark lanes.
Yes, is that what you do? Do you flash the lights? Did it work?
Apparently so.
I was fishing on the church late. I had a fishing session with a couple of anglers. Spenny was down with us, and shout out to Robert Orme, who travelled all the way up from Warrington. We ended up meeting on the M6. As he pulled on the M6, he was kind of right by my van, so we kept in touch all the way down. Stopped and got some KFC or McDonald's or something for Mark, which I believe you got told off from your missus. Is that right?
Oh, I got told off for missus, and apparently I'm, according to Tom who I work with, I'm telling everyone I'm a health freak and then I eat a McDonald's. Apparently I've let everyone down. Right. Firstly, yes, I am kind of I'm not a health freak, but I'm trying to look after myself a little bit more. And everyone likes to rub it in if they see some fault in your being.
Well,
so yes, my name is Mark and I ate a McDonald's.
You are aware how the internet works, right?
I'm well aware. Everybody looks for everyone's fault and then decides to point it out, probably to make themselves feel better about their own.
Yes. Generally, it's a place where you can say things you'd never dare say to somebody in real life. I think is the golden rules, and the more toxic, the more you should say it. I think that's kind of how it goes down. I'm saying this because I diverge a little bit, but while we're on track, I saw advertising bit on the official Nash tackle page today, and it was Tom Foreman and it was the other guy, it's my mind anyway. It was a picture of them modelling the new clothing. Looks like a picture on the sort of seafront of South End or somewhere like that. One of them's got the new Parker jacket on, and the other one's got quite a nice looking camo like puffer jacket type thing. Looks pretty good. Both good looking lads, both got skinny jeans on, and you know, it's a bit of a modelly shot walking down the promenade, whatever.
In their best catalogue pose.
Yes, well, they're actually walking, but yeah, I thought it was quite a good picture. Yeah. I thought the clothing looks good, and some of the comments underneath, oh my goodness. It's fine to have, you know, some people were basically calling people mugs. If you're going to buy designer clothing, you'll buy it from designer brands and not fishing brands, and you know, very, very narrow minded, all that, but you're entitled to that opinion. You know, no problem with that. If people want to look, you know, the stuff's practical, there's no two ways about it. This stuff's warm, big furry collars, you know, most fishing gear is, you know, there's not too much crappy fishing gear out there. And if you want to, you know, spend the money and buy somebody that looks smart, then that is your freedom. And it's also your freedom to say, I don't really like it, you know, fine, bit pointless, you know. Remember the old saying, if you haven't got something good to say, then probably don't say it at all, because it just makes you look a bit of a pillock. But anyway, you are entitled to say that. But then when you go past that and go personal, insinuating that one of these guys is fat, which clearly neither are, two good looking lads, but making really toxic shitty comments, you know, because they've both kind of got like trendy skinny jeans on, and one of the comments is why do fat people wear skinny jeans. I'm just like, listen mate, you would not say that to a human being in the cold light of day, and if you did, you'd get knocked the fuck out. So why do you feel it's okay to say hurtful, shitty things on the internet? Well, I'll tell you why. Because you're a twat. That's the long and short of it.
I didn't think it'd be long before you had a rant.
Yeah, it's just annoyed me today that, and I did make a comment of words to that effect underneath. But why would you just, you know, but these are human beings. People are reading this, you know, neither guy's clearly fat, but you know, people have issues. Nobody's super confident, and when people shoot you down, especially strangers, for no apparent reason, all right, if you don't like the clothing, that's one thing, but making comments like that, I mean, you're just an arsehole, a toxic shitter is my expression. I mean, one guy made a comment, something like, is it compulsory to wear girls' jeans? That was funny. You know, I was like, okay, you know, it's fair game. I used to wear skinny jeans, and when I was a rocker in the 80s, I used to wear skinny jeans, and the trend was for those, you know, kind of like big trainers, you know, like the high techs and stuff, the ones that I forget what they call them now, but not the low trainers ones with like the high tops, were they called, or something. And everyone used to say I look like a golf club, you know, that's fair game. When I walked out, and I was super skinny when I was young, and you know, I walked out in a pair of skinny jeans and a pair of them high tops, and I was called a golf club. It's funny, right? That's banter, no problem with that. But when you start going really personal, I mean, that's just shitty. And there's no need for it to consider yourself a horrible human being, because we clearly know you already are. But apart from that, the clothing looks ace. I'm actually going to Cannock tomorrow. I'm back down fishing at Nash's this week. I've got another couple of lads through the carp cast on a trip. One of the lads, Rob, last week, who you met, Mark, because we delivered your...
Nice girl.
Yeah, we delivered your McDonald's.
It's your fault. All the abuse I've got needs to be deflected onto the Classic.
Yeah, we picked a McDonald's up. We were driving up the A14 past you, so we thought we'd have a meet up on Cow Lane, flash a few lights, and see what the doggers were saying while munching on a McDonald's. So, yeah.
Well, after that first flash of the lights, we heard a squeaky right ear in the distance, and that was all the action we got.
Yeah, it's on a baiting mission, no doubt. So Rob, who was with us anyway, ended up catching one of the most desirable fish in the Church Lake, which happened to be a PB for him, £37, a fish known as the Beauty Queen, which is an absolute stunner, one I've never caught. Spenny had quite a few bites this week as well. Spenny was down with us. He had a load on zigs. He ended up having 6 or 7 bites, all bar 2 on zigs. Do you think it was zig weather last week?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, I was on Monks where I'd love to have been sat behind the zigs, but unfortunately it doesn't allow them through the summer.
Ah, okay.
So
it's September. Yeah, we're in autumn.
I'm from Yorkshire, it's still flip-flop weather.
Yeah, it was pretty warm last week, actually. I was in shorts and flip-flops a couple of days, biting a bit of the plastic off to put on zigs. I just had one scraper 20. I gave the other two lads first choice, and I fished in a swim known as No Carp Corner, which lived up to its name, although I did have a bite on the last morning. But Rob stuck at it, worked all week. He ended up losing a couple, lost a real good one, and then did have a PB. But all Spennies were quite small. They were literally all 20s, and it's probably more 40s than 20s in that lake, I would say. And he ended up having half a dozen. So, it's full moon next week. It's fished its head off last full moon, so I'm really looking forward to getting down there tomorrow. But on the way, I'm stopping at Cannock to have a look at the... all the new products. There's a trade show going on at a hotel in Cannock, and I'm going to have a look on the way down there, so I'll see all the new clothing, all the new gear in the flesh. But yeah, some I like this time of year, being a bit of a carp geek when all the new products come out. I noticed the Fox stuff on the net today. Did you see the new Fox alarms, which I presume are replacing the Fox NTXRs?
I've seen the video on them. To be honest, it was on. I put it on and I was pottering around, so I didn't take massive amount of notice, because I know they'll be well out of my price range.
Yeah, but they're expensive. I think they're like 169 or 179 each or something, pretty similar to the last ones. Initial impressions, they look quite cheap. I really like the look of the NTXRs. I do like the functionality of the NTXRs. If you've got unlimited bank account, they are a great alarm. I do love the drop back feature on them, and my Nash R3s that I use are absolutely bulletproof, best value alarm on the market, you know, one of the most reliable, etc, etc. They're fantastic, but they would be perfect if they had some sort of drop back tone, or different tone, or something that lets you know your bobbin's going backwards instead of forwards. And that's literally my only gripe I've ever had with any other alarm, not just Nash. I know Fox have got the patents locked up properly on that drop back thing, so that's why not many other alarms, if any, have got them. But obviously they are double the price of the Nash alarms. But these ones, I don't know why they've gone, but you know, one of the most popular Fox alarms years ago was the RX, and they've called this one the RX Plus. It looks like they've completely done away with the NTXRs. So I don't really know what's going on there. So I did message Lewis Porter, Fox PR guy, marketing, and asked him if there's any trade shows I can go and have a look at the Fox stuff as well. And he's given me a date in October. Wednesday in October, so hopefully I'll be able to go and have a look at the Fox stuff as well. But yeah, I'm going to go and see the Nash stuff tomorrow. There's a few new products on there that I really like the look of. So yeah, going to go and check it out. I will report back next week. And if there's any other companies out there that have got trade shows and whatever going on, it's not all Nash and Fox. If anybody else has got anything they want us to look at, send Mark or I a message or both. And if we can get out and have a look, then we shall do. I expect you see a lot of new stuff in the shop, don't you, Mark?
When it finally comes up to the shop, but the trade shows are generally the first place you actually see them. Although I know one item I'm very excited to actually see and get my hands on and have a play is the new Graze accelerator rods, which they're not replacing the air curve, they're going in above them.
Mm.
And, you know, I've had a good chat with Ed about them. He's been using them, you know, to catch 250s this year. And, well, he says they're everything the air curves are and then more. And, you know, the air curves are the best rods I've ever used, so I'm quite excited to see what these are.
Are they for distance fishing?
They're for all fishing. You know, there's quite a few in the range, up to the 13-foot, 3.5-pound, you know, down to, 12-foot. And if it's like the... I haven't got the details in front of me, but if it's like the rest of the Graze rods, there's 10-foot models as well.
I'm in the market. Obviously, I've spouted on quite a lot about the Slovenia trips that I'm doing next year. That's absolutely flying, by the way. VIPcarpholidays.com to get in touch. We've got literally every day there's another booking coming in. It's proving to be very popular. But I'm torn. So there's a bit of long range fishing that I'm going to be doing over there, especially the Croatia lakes. I've had the Nash NRXDs for years now, but with my casting ability, you know, there's probably a ceiling of for me of like 140, 150 yards with those rods, a 12-foot, 3.5-pound rod, just because of my casting ability. But I'm looking for something for myself that'll cast a bit further, maybe. And I'm then looking for, I need a load of sets of equipment for customers next year. So I want like a medium priced set of rods that are chucking rods. I don't really know where to look. It may be better that we buy them on the continent because a lot of the European stuff is a lot cheaper than the English kind of Tati brands, but it's very made for purpose, if you know what I mean. And obviously in countries where they have a lot of big lakes and, you know, casting 100, 120, 130 meters is the norm, you know, on every lake, and then the big casters are casting further, then you know, obviously the gear's stepped up a little bit from our gear. So, you know, €150 rod is probably a lot tougher than £150 rod in the UK, so I might be better buying something abroad. But yeah, anyone's got any good suggestions for a sort of a medium price 150 quid type rod that's, you know, capable, that's nice to land fish on, but is a good chucking rod, then do let us know. But yeah, we want everything, bivvies, and you know, I'll be looking at some sort of medium, you know. I'd love to give everybody the top of the range double tops or Titans or whatever, but it's probably budget wise not going to be an option to do that. So I'll be looking for some you know, nice big pram hood type two man bivvies, moderately priced, and yeah, so yeah, after some good ones for me and some kind of mid range stuff, probably want 4 to 6 sets of equipment that I need for next year. So I will be looking keenly at the Northern Angling Show. Did you see that tickets went on sale for that this week, Mark? Did you see that?
I did see that, yes, and some quite juicy competition, I see.
Yeah, we've got, I think there's a couple of competitions at the minute. There's one that's just going to be a fishing holiday at Destination Unknown currently, but it'll be you know, to the value of 500 quid a fishing holiday somewhere for you and a partner, maybe a nice place with a hot tub sort of thing you go for, Mark. That's kind of like a data collection competition on our website, northernanglingshow.co.uk. And there's also £1,000 worth of fishing tackle going to be given out as well, and that's promoting the the launch video promoting the tickets that have gone on sale. All free to enter. Get yourself over to either the Northern Angling Show Facebook page or northernanglingshow.co.uk. 24th and 25th of February this year it is. Check that out. But yeah, I'm going to be taking a lot of interest this year in all the different stands. Obviously, I'm in the market to spend $5,000 or $6,000 on fishing gear this year that I haven't done for a lot of years. So I'm interested to see what's out there for everything from like we need a lot of pods and but all European style angling, so rods, pods, bivvies, mats, slings, nets, like everything. I'm fairly interested in that. Put our second edition of the Carpcast Select out yesterday. You may or may not have seen that, Mark, but it was my pick this week after yours last week, after Jerry Hammond.
Yeah, so you went for Simon Scott. Was it part one or part two you put out? Because they're both very informative reads.
I put out it was episode 18 and episode 19 of the Carpcast, which is some time ago. I put out part two, which was episode 19, which was the bulk of the juicy stuff, to be honest. That's why I put part two out, because it was where we really got stuck into the technical stuff. But if you do want to check out part one, then it's episode 18 of the Carpcast. If you are a Carpcast extra member, you can go back and listen to all the old stuff. You can join the Carpcast extra for as little as £11.99. There's a load of extra content and obviously access to all the back episodes. But yeah, we are going to be releasing our favourite interviews. Not the whole show, just the interview part of the show. So you'll miss Mark's dry sense of humour and our banter and our technical stuff. But you can always become an extra member and go back and listen to all the old stuff. A lot of people seem to think our early stuff was our best. Some people do seem to think that, Mark.
Maybe. Are we getting old and boring then?
Yeah, I don't know. Funnily enough, I spoke to Roger today and he was listening to one of the more recent, in fact it was the one about the dog in last week, and he made a comment that he finds you really funny and he loves the rapport that we have between each other, you know, your dry sense of humour and the way you just make me laugh randomly with little comments. And yeah, he was complimenting us, basically saying how much he buzzes off our randomness.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because I know Roger is an honest chap. He doesn't like it, or he's got some constructive criticism, he will let you know. So praise as well. Thanks, Roger.
Yeah, I think our relationships evolved into more of the normal conversations that we have, really. And yes, your little funny one-liners are being appreciated.
So, jolly good.
Right, I feel like this has been all over the place at the minute. We just keep rambling, but something. What's new? Something I saw on the net today is the new Gardner hooks. Have you spotted those?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Those bent hook, curved shanky sort of things. This has been getting quite a lot of, abuse and criticism, I think, is the best way of saying it.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it, I mean, Gardner have a hook called the Mugger, which is about as close to a bent hook without actually being a bent hook. It's like kind of a medium shank hook. And to be honest, I've always thought they were quite aggressive. I've used them, and they're not really for me. And they've gone a step further. They've made a hook. That's, again, it's not a long shank hook. It's a sort of short to medium shank hook, but the last few mil towards the eye is bent round quite severely. It's almost 45 degrees, would you say, from the way the hook point is. Kind of like what we do with the kickers and what we do with shrink tubing. It's like that perfect angle. Now, there's quite a lot of reputable anglers on there, including the aforementioned Roger Baker we've just been talking about. I looked at him and thought, oh my god, that's double hooking heaven. Like that can't be good. Obviously I've not used them. Lewis seems to be living by the sword, dying by the sword. Lewis Reed, who is on the main men at Gardner, All round nice fella, but he seems to be fighting every comment from anybody saying that you haven't used him, you don't know, you know, these hooks are perfectly safe. My first instinct is why do it? What? Why? You know, it's kind of the exact angle that we do with shrink tube and kickers and stuff anyway, so what is the need for it? Like, why make some metal? I don't know. I just think when it's hard to describe, but this bend goes round a full turn. How would you describe it, Mark?
It's just kind of like the old the Fox Series 5 and the Carpenter's Nailers, but, you know, shorter and even more of a bent shank. And I just can't see the need for anything like that. When I saw it and saw there's a load of comments, you didn't even need to open them to see exactly what they were going to be. And like you say, they were for some quite reputable anglers in there criticising them.
Yeah. You know, including, you know, Carp Talks rig guy, Joe Turnbull. You know, he backed down a little bit after a while. I mean, Lewis was saying, you haven't used him, we have. But to be honest, I mean, obviously Gardner have been very proud advocates of the Ronnie rig. Now, the Ronnie rig for me is borderline. I mean, it's super effective, it's super good, but I have had a number of double hooked fish with that. Now, obviously, I consider myself quite experienced. I'm not going to rip a hook out. I'm going to take time and make sure it comes out properly. You know, putting fish welfare as much as you possibly can. I've always got forceps with me. I've got the right equipment to take out, you know, an extremely well embedded hook. But I have had concerns about some of the hook holds I've had with the Ronnie rig, thinking they're a bit too good, and I haven't quite decided if I'm going to ditch that rig or continue using it, because of the because of how effective it is. But it's borderline, I'd hate to say it's borderline dangerous, because it's not in my hands, but it almost certainly is in some people's hands. Maybe I haven't got the patience to get the hook out properly, maybe I haven't got forceps or the right equipment. I can imagine mouth damage happening with the Ronnie rig. Now this seems a stage further to me. I don't know. I'm really. It's very hard to comment on something without using it. But you know, Lewis was making some comments in there saying, "Oh, the angle of the photograph makes it look worse." I mean, my initial impression of that was, "You're clutching at straws now." Like, oh, it looks more aggressive than it is because of the angle of the picture. I'm not sure, but yeah, no need is kind of what my initial impression.
Yeah, I'm looking at the picture of the hook now. I've also just sent you the same picture. You know, it's not the hook in the pack. It's of the hook, just like looking at it side view from the view. And I'm looking at the point, and it is pointing literally straight at the eye. Is that bent over? Which for me just almost totally closes the gape and makes the margin of error for the fish, you know, very very narrow. That's why I like things like you know, like the Twister. You know, it's got that sharp straight point, and it's still a very very wide gape.
Yeah, I'm sure this hook is super effective, but interesting. It certainly created a debate, though. It very much.
Yeah, you'll get Lewis on as a guest now with slated his products.
I haven't slated it. It's just, you know, I've always thought the Mugger is a fairly bent hook. I mean, it lends itself very well to the Ronnie rig. I use the Fang X on the Ronnie rig and the Twister. The Fang X is not as curved as the Mugger, and I have still had... I've still had sort of double hooking on the inside of the mouth with that, and as I said, I've never damaged a fish on unhooking it, but I can imagine other people will. You know, I've had some that have been really tough to get out, they've been absolutely nailed. Interesting, very interesting. I'd like to see them in the flesh when they come out. I mean, what do you do? Do you try using them and see if it double hooks just to prove a point?
I won't, because I'm happy with what I'm using right now. I don't need to use them. But do you know what? I have seen on the net, which is just not very good at all. And quite, I think, an own goal for the company involved.
Yeah.
Vitties are now going from 12 Jaffa cakes in a pack to 10 and changing the flavour. Sorry to change tack completely there, but
I did see that. I think there's some new laws coming in about sugar content. And I think part of the reason, I did notice that the price per Jaffa cake is exactly the same. And they've reduced the price accordingly. Now, not all the shops are, but McVitie's have reduced it exactly pro rata. So it was 12, it's now 10, and you're paying for... They've reduced the price by exactly what they're missing to want. And I'm sure it's to conform with some sort of legal regulations about how much sugar they can sell in a pack. As for the flavour changing, I'm not sure. But what I do know is... I'm talking about Slovenia again, but the... Hofer, as it's called, which is the European equivalent of Aldi, H-O-F-E-R, seems to be called that in most of the European countries. I travelled through Austria, Slovenia, Romania and stuff. They sell what looks like a Jaffa cake copy, which I think is nicer. And they also do other flavours. They do a blackcurrant one that's got a milk chocolate coating instead of the normal chocolate. Oh my God, they're... Sorry, but McVitie's, your history dumped.
Yeah, you're gonna have to bring some of them back on your next trip over there. But also, while we're on food, I've moaned before because I'm apart from the odd McDonald's that get forced down my throat, I generally go for the gluten-free gear now because it's just healthier.
Yeah.
As a Tesco's the other day, having a look around that section, and there was some Dime Bar cake in there.
Oh yeah.
I'm thinking, that's there by mistake. But no, Dime Bar cake is actually gluten-free, so I fill my boots.
Yeah, I'm into the old Dime Bar cake. Our local cake shop up here sells it. And yes. Sorry to keep going on about Slovenia. But their national... every country has a dish or... that is famous for a certain type of food. Or, you got Italy with the pizzas and the pasta and...
England, America with the burgers,
England with the tikka masala.
That's traditionally English food. Yeah,
well, it's the national dish of England, actually, tikka masala. Did you know that? It is, anyway. But Slovenia is famous for its cakes, and damn fine they are too. There's a Lake Bled's actually got its own cake, the Bled cake, which is like a sort of vanilla-y custardy type sponge thingy. Donuts there are very famous for various flavours. The traditional ones got marmalade in it. It's like an orangey sort of marmalade inside a donut. It's weird. Gashper took us to this cake shop. We'd been out all day driving around looking at lakes, and we came back maybe 8:30, 9 p.m. in the evening. There's a famous factory that makes all this stuff, and it delivers 24 hours a day. It's stock in different places like service stations, garages and whatever. Anyway, he went, I've got to take you to this shop on the way home. And I'm like, look, it's 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. We pulled off into this services, and in the back of this services there's a shop, and there was a queue of people that must have been 50 people long at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. 50 people. I was like, what's going on here? And apparently it's like it all day, all night. These cakes get refreshed every hour, direct from this factory that bring them down, and I've never seen anything like it. They must be busy like that all the time, because this queue was just, it was flying through. There was three people serving in this hatch, big signs up, and they were rapid. I'm like, what time is it quiet if there's 50 people outside queuing at 9 p.m? It was crazy. And the cakes were very nice. It's another reason to love Slovenia. They love cakes, and they're very good at them. Something else I've seen on the net. Well, it's kind of on the net. England were competing in the World Championships. I spoke to Rob Hughes before, during and after. In fact, let's get Rob on now. I apologise for the quality of this is not fantastic because for some reason I cannot record phone calls anymore without a clicking sound. This will be the last one until it's resolved. We'll make everybody do Skype in future, but unfortunately this one is on the phone. So let's get Rob in now. So have you got a few minutes or are you busy managing?
No, go on, you can come at me live in the manager's meeting if you want. I think it's all cleared up. So, yeah, go on, let's go for it. Let's go for it.
Okay, so first of all, for anybody living under a rock and doesn't know, where exactly are you?
I'm at Lake Decida for the 19th Phipps Ed World Carp Fishing Championships. This is the big one, the one that we come out to every year. And it feels like we're in Siberia, to be honest. Not hungry at the moment. It is absolutely catered.
Wow. And obviously with the England men's team, who's in the team?
We have, on the rod squad at the moment, we've got Neil Rivers and Chris Holmes in A section. In B section, we have Billy Flowers and Jamie Londers. And in C section, we have Wayne Mansford and Ryan Need. So they're on the rods at the moment. Myself and Graham may be in management positions. We've got Mark Bartlett and Carl Pitcher as the big guns, the subs that will be coming in if we need to bang a little bit further, which the wind's really picking up now, so we might have to think about doing something there. And running the banks for us in each section, we have three extra lads out that run the bank. And basically what that is to look at the tactics and techniques that the other lads are using, see if there's anything that we're missing out, and basically just bring information back to us. And we've got Kev Hewitt, we've got Harry Charrington, and we've got Tom Maker doing that. And so that's the squad of us that's out here.
Yeah,
go on, sorry, Jay.
Has the match started now?
Yeah, the match has started. It is Thursday today, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it Thursday today? Mate, I haven't slept for God knows how long. I don't know what day of the week it is. I think it's Thursday. I have just finished a manager's meeting. Every morning there's a manager's meeting to discuss any issues of the race, and there's been a little bit of carnage today over a number of things. But the match started yesterday at 2 o'clock. So we're not 24 hours in yet. 72 hour match, so three days, three nights. We finished Saturday afternoon, but things aren't going very well at all, I have to say. Unfortunately, none of us have caught yet, which is a bit of a blow. We have lost starting off in section A. There's a bit of a snag in the swim in front of us, and the lads have had three bites now and lost them all to the same snag, which is a bit of a pain. And it is in a really, really, really annoying position. And it's one of those ones that if we're going to be in with the shout of catching anything, we've got to try and get past and around it. But then you're in a situation where you run the risk of getting into it, and it's just a problem. So that will have a big effect on that. It's one of these things that you can't see. We don't know how big it is. We don't actually know what it is. We think it's a stump covered in mussels, or an old tree covered in mussels, but it's in the sort of position that causes a real, real difficulty. So that's a bit of a problem there. B section, not making any excuses. We haven't drawn the best. There's a lovely wide bay, then there's a straight bit, and then there's a nice corner, and we're smack bang in the middle of the straight bit. So whales to our left have caught 1-2 kilo fish, I think. We've not caught the thing, and then the Italians to the other side have not caught the thing. So, you know where you get a duff bit of a section? We're plumb in the middle of the duff bit, which is, you know, it is what it is. That's what happens with these matches. Sometimes you're in a good and sometimes you're in a bad. And I think B is a really important section for us to win as well, because there's some big teams in there. And we're just smack bang and plumb in the middle of the duff bit, which is tricky. And then C section, we've had one bite down there, but sadly that fell off as well. And C section, we've got a reasonable paid there. We've got a good bit of open water in front of us. And I think we're just starting to develop in that one. It's a very... up until first thing this morning, it was a really low scoring match. Yesterday, when the 9 o'clock scores came out, 1 5-kilo fish for each of our swims. So basically one fish in each peg would have put us first. So we were hoping through the course of the night, that's how close it was, virtually nothing had been caught. I think there was in one section, there was only one fish caught for 13 teams. But now things have started to move a little bit, and the Romanians are stepping out, the Ukrainians are stepping out, and Croatia are doing quite well in a couple of areas as well. So the usual suspects are doing quite well, and we just can't seem to light a fire.
How far behind are we? Is it anyone's if things change?
Well, it's starting to get a little bit serious now. Yeah, it wasn't. Give me 2 minutes, please. Sorry, I'm just on the phone. Sorry, somebody saw on the street to me. Let's have a look. The Ukrainians have 27 kilos in Sector A. Let me just explain the sections first, because this is where it gets a little bit confusing. There are 26 nations in total.
Yeah.
But as soon as you go over 20 nations, they split the sections. So basically, we are fishing in A section has two subsections. The low numbers, 1 to 13, the high numbers, 14 to 26. We are in 16, so we're in the high numbers. And at the moment in that section, Serbia are in the lead. They've had 5 fish for 28 kilo. They are in peg 23, so they've got the end peg. Then we've got, 26 is the end peg. I'm just looking at the scoreboard now. So Serbia are leading that with 28. Then we've got Bulgaria with 23. They've got 6 fish. Then we've got Belgium with 22. Russia with 17. Romania with 17. Lithuania with 4. Macedonia with 2. Georgia with 1.9. And then England, Spain, Bosnia, Latvia, and Israel haven't caught a thing. Interestingly, we're all not far off each other. 14, 15, and 16, nobody's caught. 17, Belgium have caught. So we're just on the edge of catching, but we're in, again, in A section, we're in one of those bits where there don't seem to be any fish in our bit, plus we've got a snag. So getting 3 bites has been pretty good, but unfortunately, we've probably lost them. It's a bit confusing.
I think what I would like to do is give you a call each morning, just get a quick 5-minute update, just like that, and then I'll edit all the bits together and have okay. A little bit of a diary over the 3 days, if that's all
yeah,
right.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, okey-cokey. Yeah, that's no problem whatsoever. Do you want to go through a few more bits and bobs here now as a general lighter summary? Because otherwise it will go on for hours.
Yes, definitely. Summarise whatever you can.
All right. So summary at the moment then will be basically the fire that we were hoping to start hasn't happened. The weather is very, very windy, and we've got one good draw. We've got one average draw. We've got one pretty poor draw, to be honest. Unfortunately, you know, the draw hasn't been fantastically kind to us, but I'm not going to grumble about that because that's what it is. But basically, you've got two teams that are starting to step out now across all three sections. That's Ukraine and Romania. And for us to have any hope of gold, we've got to keep up with Romania because we've got them in all three sections. It's looking a bit grim at the moment, I have to say. I don't think our tactics are massively wrong. I think that our pegging isn't brilliant, and maybe we will now have to think about changing our tactics because the pegs that we've got don't really suit the tactics that we were going to run. The other one was that we caught an awful lot of grass carp in practice, and we thought that we were going to come out and target some of those grass carp that are sort of 8 to 15 kilos. We've got to have a lot of those. And in 2 weeks since we've been out here, the weather's gone from being 35 degrees to 11 degrees.
Yeah.
And that's just absolutely smashed them on the head. So, it's caught us on the back foot a little bit. It's not very good at the moment.
Okay, well, I will check in tomorrow morning, and hopefully we'll have a brighter story to tell.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, anybody listening at home, we can absolutely assure you that we're doing everything that we possibly can. The wind's really picking up. It's blowing straight across us in one of the pegs, so it might be that we'll make a substitution and get some of the big guns out just to see if we can get that extra little bit of distance, because when you've got long casters on either side of you, just that ability, when you smack bang in the middle of a section, the ability to go that little bit further sometimes helps. So we're going to be looking into that too, so there might be some changes by tomorrow.
Definitely. I will speak to you then. Cheers, Rob.
Brilliant. Cheers, guys. Thank you.
What was the story? I see that we didn't win. What?
No, we didn't win. It was the first thing I'll say is that I'm very, very impressed with our performance, actually, despite the fact that we didn't win. We were amazingly close to a bronze. Firstly, Ukraine won. Ukraine had, as you know, it's split into three sections, and across three sections, Ukraine had a first, and a second. Now, we haven't had a clear winner like that for such a long period of time. Hats off to them. They fished incredibly. There is, and I'll put a photograph of him on the Carp Team England page. He's with me. This one guy, he is 17 years old, and he can cast 280 metres. I know, 280 metres. It's beyond belief, Jay. You know, and there'll be people out there going, "No, we can't." He can. Simple as. Don't argue with me. He can. It is ridiculous. 280 metres of sled can fish. He's when you see the photograph of me by the side of him, my head looks like a baby's head. Bearing in mind that I am 6 foot tall, and I'm not exactly skinny. He makes me look tiny. Massive. Really, really nice guy. So he was part of their squad there. They just fished a perfect match. They've done an awful lot of homework on it, and they fished a perfect match. And you know what? I'm more than happy to turn around and say we were beaten by a much better team on that. We were in the mix with the others, and you'll look at the finishing position, and our finishing position shows 11th, which you will think, oh dear, that's not very good, 11th. Mate, it was so immensely close. And if we'd have had 2 kilos in two of the sections that we were in, literally one fish, and our ascendancy was amazing. If we'd have had 2 kilos, then we would have been bronze medalists. It was even closer than last year. It's absolutely amazing, this competition. I'm just going over the Danube in the middle of Budapest at the moment. It's absolutely stunning. Looking over, we're going from Buda into Pest, are we? We're leaving Pest and we're going into Buda at the moment. And I've got a couple of days work here, but we've decided that rather than working in the offices of BBTV, we're actually going to work on the banks of Balaton. So the mobile office is on the run, and we're actually going to work at Balaton. So I'm hoping to see if I can catch myself a Balaton carp over the next day or so. Back to the event. Ukraine won. Romania came second, France third. Russia were fourth, Serbia fifth. And then, you know, all the usual suspects that they thought they were. Now, you remember the last time that we spoke, we were languishing right at the bottom of the pile, we were last. And that is, and I'm not going to make any excuse for this whatsoever, and I'm not going to make any apology for this. We go to these events to win gold medals. And a silver and a bronze is a nice consolation, but I want to come away with a gold medal. And the fact that we're fourth, 14th or 24th doesn't make any difference, because what people remember is who was first, and sometimes they remember second or third. So I'm going out to win, simple as. And we came up with a tactic in practice that if it worked, we would be almost certainly up there and immensely competitive. Now, you can't go into the backyard of the likes of Serbia, Croatia, some of the Romania in particular, these very, very strong nations that fish these sort of venues. I can't go in and play them at their game in their backyard. If I do that, at best, they will beat us, and we will probably get, if we're very lucky, a silver or a bronze medal. So I want to go out for a win. So what we did is we came up with a slightly different tactic. Unfortunately, from the last time we were over here practicing, the weather was 30 degrees when we were here. They dropped down to 13 degrees. So that had a very, very distinct difference. And, you know, got there and thought, you know what? It's a very different playing surface today to what it used to be. Is it still going to work? This is the question that I'm met with as a manager. We've got a tactic. We know we'll absolutely smash the place to pieces if the conditions are right. But we don't think the conditions are right. What do? Do you try it or do you leave it? So we thought, right, we'll try it. Because if we try it, it works. I'm not arrogant, so arrogant to say that it's game over. But what I can say is that if that tactic had worked, I'm convinced that it would be a different position. However, it didn't work. But we have to give it time.
Can we get in on that tactic?
It was evolving grass carp. And it was all involved in baiting strategy, involved in grass carp and all sorts of bait that we were using. Unfortunately, the water temperature right. dropped down and the grass carp went on the feed. What I can tell you is that in practice, just one of our lads had five grass carp over 15 kilos. When you think that, you know, people were putting, if they put 10 kilo on, maybe 15 kilo over a 24-hour period, they were doing well. The big fish that we were targeting, the way that we were catching them in practice was just ridiculous. You know, there's I caught a fish that was just shy of 40 pounds on the any in there. It was a really, really, really good tactic. However, unfortunately, on the day, it just didn't work. But you've got to have a go, Jay. You know what it's like. You've got to have a punt at these things. So, had a go.
Yeah.
Friday, it hadn't started working. We thought we'd give it all of Friday night to see if that was sorry, Wednesday. Get me days mixed up. Wednesday, early bite tactics going into Wednesday night. We've come out of Thursday morning and literally we've got nothing on the scoreboard. I think there was only two or three of us, I think four teams that hadn't caught anything at all. But because of the way the sections worked, we were stone cold last. I remember the Croatian captain came up and he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "This isn't normal. England never catch nothing. You're doing something." it's like, yeah, we are doing something, but it's not clearly not working at the moment. So, you know, it's quite interesting because all the talking point was partly about how well Ukraine were doing, and also partly how England had not caught this, and they couldn't believe that we hadn't caught anything. And it was sort of, not necessarily by design, but it was by test. And then when we gave it sort of, you know, the afternoon, the night, and by the next morning we know that nothing's happening, so we've got to start changing. So by the time we've gone on to plan B, effectively we're 24 hours into a 72-hour competition. So we've got to start again. And the way that I would describe it is, if you imagine Lewis Hamilton on row 3 of the grid, thinking that he's going to get past everybody and there's a chance he can win a world title, and he comes up with a bit of a brave manoeuvre at the start of the race, but he can potentially overtake everybody and get it first corner first and then hold them off. And that's effectively what we were, but we got to the first corner and spun. Everyone's gone past us, we've stalled, everyone's gone past us. What we've then had to do is we've got to restart the engine after they've gone and see if we can catch them up. And mate, you should have seen it. There was one day on Saturday, we raised 15 places.
Wow.
And people looking at us going, "How are you doing this? How have you gone from catching nothing to what you're doing now?" And, you know, the French were bronze. They were terrified because if we caught one fish in one section, we'd have knocked them off bronze.
Yeah.
The Russians in another section who thought they were going to get bronze were terrified, as were the Romanians in silver, because if we'd have caught in all three places and then had a bit of a lucky pop with a slightly bigger fish, we might have even got a silver medal. It was so tight. And, like, the margins, and I've said this before in this competition, the margins between success and failure is usually tiny. Now, in this situation, for the gold medal, it wasn't, because they wiped the floor of the Ukrainians with absolutely everybody. They dominated it practically off. Nobody could touch them. So, you know, almost from the end of day one, everybody was fishing for a silver medal at best. But the margin between silver and probably 12 was only a couple of three fish.
Yeah.
So tight. And I reckon if we'd have had another 4 hours, then we might have had a bronze. But, you know, there's all these what ifs. If Romania hadn't lost three fish, then they might have been a bit higher up. If France had caught an extra two, they'd have had a silver, not bronze. So, you know, no excuses. But I was talking to Nigel, by the way, on Talk Sport this morning, and he said, "How do you rate your performance?" And I said, "Well, genuinely, I would say that whilst this is on paper our worst result, I think it's our best ever performance."
Yeah.
The boys were unbelievable. Like, Neil and Chris were fantastic in their section, because we were in the end of the duff bit before it started getting good. And if you look at the people around us, they caught virtually bugged their all. And what they did was they caught a load of fish, established a really, really good platform, and then the fish backed off because they caught so many so quickly, the fish backed off a little bit. So we got Carl Pitcher in, who cast the moon and back, and it just carried on. And, you know, to go, I think we were 10th in section. To get from 10th in section up to, I think we touched 4th at one stage, but then we got hit by one other fish because it was starting to drop down to 5th. But that was a phenomenal result. Billy and Jamie, just amazingly solid. all the way through they were solid, as they always are. You know, there's no question with those two. And Wayne and Ryan were just a little bit unlucky. There was a couple of snags in their swim, and it looked a really nice swim. But actually, when you started fishing it, like, there were seven fish lost in that section. In that swim.
Wow.
If any one of those had been landed, it would have been a very different position. And if I was to say that 8 kilos out would have got us 5 points, that one fish there would have taken us from 11 to 7.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a 2 kilo fish in Billy and Jamie's swim would have given us an extra point, but not the French 9 points. It would have meant we would have gone over. And then in Neil and Chris's swim, 2 kilos there, we'd have given us 2 points because we'd have overtaken, I think it was Russia and Lithuania. So really, really, really tight. But, you know, poor old Wayne and Ryan, they've chucked out. They're fishing a blinding match, and there's a sunken tree in the swim off there. They lost two on it. They've then moved a little bit, had a fish, it's come off wind, and it's got caught on a line snag and brought in a load of feeder line. And you know when you get caught on the line and you can't get any further in, you can see the fish, but you can't get any further in?
Yeah.
It was like that, and it's like, God, just scuffing the swim that we didn't know about, that is very difficult to work around. You're not allowed to drop your legs in these events.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first thing is tactically drop a leg to get around it, and you can't. But anyway, look, it's by the by. I'm immensely proud of everybody. They've done a bloody good job, and I think that was our best performance today. Even better than the one that we won.
So how did...
Just because of turning it around.
How do the swims work? So do you draw in a section and then you pick a swim, or do you actually draw the swim itself so you get no choice? Like,
no, it's a really strange random allocation. So basically you have section A, section B, section C. And you will have a low number, a mid number, and a high number in each section.
Yeah.
So there are 26 pegs in each section. So in section one, we had a high number in section one, which was 23. In section, actually, no, it was a mid number there. I apologise. It was a mid number. It was 16.
Yeah.
And then in section B, we had a low number, which was 6. And then in C section, we had a high number, which was, anyway, by the by, I forget my numbers now. I'm trying to get them all. But a low number and a high in each section. You can never have more than one end peg. So if you draw an end peg, you couldn't have one section at 26 and another.
Yeah.
So they rank the swims on low, mid, and high, but they take the end pegs out. And it's literally just a random allocation. So draw number one, there's loads of draws. Draw number one is order of draw. So we have to draw to find out when we're going to draw.
Yeah.
So Graham maybe did a draw and he found that we were going to draw, I think it was 60. And then I do a draw to allocate who is going to go into which section. So the names are written down. So Neil and Chris, they will be going in, and I will pull a ball out of a hat which will say either section A, section B, or section D. So I can't pick who goes into which section, I'm told.
Yeah.
Which makes things a little bit more difficult, because if you've got a really big casket pair, obviously you want them on the tighter bit where you can go a little bit further than everyone else, or alternatively on a real open water bit where you've got more room to stretch your legs.
Yeah.
So that's randomly allocated, and then it's a computerized draw for the others, where it's almost like you know, like a machine that basically just says, right, randomly, 6 will be paired with 23, will be paired with 16.
Yeah, I get it.
So everybody gets a lower, middle, and a high.
What I was trying to get at is, like, would any amount of local knowledge help you maybe avoid the swim with the tree? But, you know, it was pot luck if even a local that knew it was there could have drawn, you know, drawn that peg.
Absolutely. Yeah, the swim draw is absolutely random. There's nothing at all you can do. We don't know who we're going to be fishing against, which countries we're going to be fishing against, which anglers.
Yeah.
You know, we could draw a peg, and we could have Romania on one side of us and Croatia on the other.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you would have three real heavyweights right next door to each other. Alternatively, you could draw Israel and Moldova.
Yeah.
On each side of you.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to those two countries, but obviously their carp fishing experience isn't as much in competition as the two big hitters that we've spoken about. So, you know, you don't know who you're going to get. And some pegs will succeed because of who you've got on either side of you.
Yeah, and if you can, you know, catch.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, come on.
You imagine drawing next to the Ukrainian that can cast 280, it was quite funny. Excuse me, ladies and children that might be listening to this, but Graham maybe summed it up. And he said, Carl Pitcher, who can cast over 200 anyway.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? He's getting his 18-incher out. Yeah. Ukrainian drops a 20-incher out. Yeah. You know, it's like, blimey. How does that work?
Do you think we have a disadvantage in the Eastern European countries? Because I mean, I know from, you know, I've spent 6 weeks fishing over there this summer, and just got back last week from another 2 week trip, and like 100 meters is the absolute minimum that you catch on these big pits. Like you know, a lot, especially the Croatia lakes, if you can't cast 100 meters, you're probably going to have a hard time of it. So that's like the entry level for them, you know, and the good guys cast 200 meters. Do you think just with the nature of UK fishing that when we're fishing those types of places, we're at a natural disadvantage just because
we're at a natural disadvantage for a number of reasons. And this is one of the things that I try and get across. And if you speak to Tommy Pickering at the feeder team, he'll say the same. And if you speak to Mark Baines at the float team, he will say the same. Firstly, the venues are so different. You know, they fish natural venues. We don't. We fish commercial puddles.
Yeah.
And there's going to be people at home that, you know, oh, it's all about fishing in England. I've caught this. It's great. Keep it real. What a complete and utter load of rot. Absolute rot. If you want to see real, then get on the continental natural waters, because that's actually real. What we're fishing is plastic.
Yeah,
we fish small venues that are starting. And that, you know, a lot of people at home will be insulted by that. I don't mean to insult you. You just need to look at reality. And I would never, ever knock anybody's fishing. But it's, you know, they look at it as Mickey Mouse fishing. It's commercial small pond fishing with loads and loads of fish stuffed into a small pond. And anything for them small is less than 50 acres. So, you know, you might have 50 fish in 50 acres and think, oh, I'm fishing a big wild pit, absolute right. You're just fishing a small Mickey Mouse pond that's got slightly less fish in it. That's what the big continental anglers will think, because they fish big wild continental venues. And, you know, for a start, they behave differently. And I was talking to somebody the other day about bogey waters. And, you know, one of my bogey waters is Todber Manor.
Mm.
And Todber Manor is it's a really, really nice little fishery. It's a great run of water. But it's a man-made fishery that's coloured water that's been stocked with man-made fish. So farm-bred fish that have been fed on pallets, stuck into a muddy puddle that is man-made. There's nothing natural about it, so I can't catch them there. I really struggle, because the fish don't have any relation to what I would normally do, which is natural fishing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's completely different. And if you brought those guys to England, they would really struggle. But we generally fish firstly that in man-made lakes that aren't natural. Secondly, for fish that are conditioned as opposed to natural fish. And thirdly, in styles that we don't do. And like you've absolutely correctly pointed out about their casting. The majority of decent continental anglers that fish rod casting as opposed to boating, they would normally fish at distances from 140 to 165 metres. That's their, you know, when we're fishing at our sort of 110 to 130, that's an average big chuck for us.
Yeah.
You can put 50 metres on.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's guys that fish in this tournament. The majority and the minimum standard, I've said it to my lads as well, I want everybody to be able to fish effectively at 150 plus, and their minimum cast must be 165.
Wow.
Because if you can't cast 165, you're not even in the game. Now, there might be cases where you don't need to. And, you know, believe me, we've caught fish in our fights, even on this match, 5 yards out. But you're not going to win a match with that. What you're doing is you're scratching and picking one out. But if you want to win matches on the continental stage against these fellas, you've got to be a man, you've got to be big, you've got to be able to get far out, you've got to bait for a long time. It's a very, very physical game. Look at the lineup of the guys, look at the physical stature of them, look at the Serbian team, look at the Ukrainian team, look at the Russians, look at the Croatians, look at the Romanians, look at any of those guys. They'd eat you for breakfast most of the time. They're terrifying. They're big, strong men.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's next? Where's the next competition? What's the plan?
Well, the next competition for us is we've got a home nations coming up at the end of October, where we'll be fishing against Scotland and against Wales. Unfortunately, Ireland haven't got a team in this, so they haven't been invited, but they've got a team in. So we're going to be fishing against Scotland and Wales, and we're just setting up the home nations. So, it, you know, my sort of crusade to try and get a little bit more awareness, carp fishing, carp competitions, etc., etc. We've had the ladies' season. They fished the Anglo-Welsh Cup and they fished the Tri-Nations International, which will be getting bigger next year. We've got France involved in it and Italy coming in as well. Then the plan will be, with the men, they work towards the back end of the season. But also I'm working on the youth team. And we might well have a youth exhibition match. It'll only be an invite one, and I'm looking for all lads that I can get just to kick off a youth squad, just to get something out there, just to try and get that on the map as well. And then the next big one for the blokes is the end of October, which will be Home Nations.
Yep. Where's the Home Nations going to be?
Well, we might have a change of venue. There's been a couple of previews on where it might be, and we've had to wait for a confirmation as to whether or not Ireland are coming in, primarily because if Ireland are in, it's a four-pair competition rather than a three-pair, because we wanted to allow the substitutes to have a run out as well. And there's a lot more venues available to me if there's 12 pairs rather than 16. So we only had confirmation that Ireland weren't going to be coming the week before the World Championship. So at the moment, I don't know, because it opens up to 12 peg venues rather than 16 peg venues. So I'm going to confirm that at some stage as soon as I'm back. But I'm not back, unfortunately, until Thursday. I'm still working out here at Northern Hungary.
Okay. Well, we will catch up with you. We need a Hughes News at some point, I think. Catch up with All Stuff TV and everything. Thanks for talking to us today. And commiserations or congratulations? I don't know which one it is.
Mate, it's none of them. You know, it's ridiculous, because last year we finished sixth, and I was immensely disappointed that we haven't achieved our full potential.
Yeah,
because we should have been third.
Yeah.
You know, if we'd have got everything right, we could potentially have won. But really, we should definitely have had a bronze medal last year, without any shadow of a doubt, and we threw one away.
Yeah.
This year, it was the other way around. You know, we took a calculated risk on how we thought we should start the match, because if it worked, it would be good. It didn't work, and what we've done is we turned it around, and it was unbelievable seeing how many people came up, and at the end, they were like, congratulations.
Yeah.
Four or five different managers came up and said, just congratulations, that was just a masterful piece of fishing. And we're like, you know, on paper, it's a never again. It doesn't look very good, but they're like, the way that you turned it around and carried on, thank God the match is finished.
Yeah.
And, you know when you come away from something, you think, we've put our absolutely everything into that, and we've done the best that we possibly could. That's how we've done it. Whereas last year, I didn't think that we'd done the best that we possibly could. I think we could have done a lot better and we just stepped off the line a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, we fished a blinding match and just did the best that we possibly could.
Fantastic. Well, let's hope we can get our gold back in the future. And in the meantime, we can look forward to beating up the home nations, I guess.
Yeah, well, let's have a crack at it. I don't know about beating them up. We love them all dearly. But certainly the gloves will be off for the next one, that's for sure. We've got a point to prove now, so come on then.
No worries. Have a great time on Balaton. Hope you catch a whacker.
Cheers, mate.
So, Rob, at the end of that, he said... first of all, commiserations to England. It was like bittersweet. Apparently, they fished very well and they pulled it out of the bag. It wasn't quite good enough. But you just see how close these matches are. You know, the difference of a couple of fish between 12th and 3rd being on the podium. So pretty amazing. But at the end there, Rob says he's on his way to Lake Balaton for an overnighter.
As you do.
As you do, yeah. He needed to do some work in Hungary, and away he went. Well, you may have seen on the net, on Facebook, he caught some fish. In fact, he had two fish on an overnighter in Balaton, did a bit more work and decided he was going to go back with the cameras, and ended up catching a nice mid-30 common. So, wow. An overnighter on Balaton. For those that don't know, Lake Balaton is an inland sea in the middle of Hungary. And it's... I forget how big it is now. It's tens of thousands of square miles, I think. It's maybe not 10,000s of square miles, but it's pretty damn big.
It's a big chunk.
It's, I don't know what rods are going to get you across that. But yeah, it's a big chuck. But yeah, wow, you know, it's a place of dreams, really. Lake Balaton, Wikipedia. There's a big music festival on the side of Balaton as well. I think they call it Festival Balaton or something. It's the largest freshwater lake in the Trans-Danubian region of Hungary. It's the largest lake in Central Europe. It's a big tourist destination as well. I can't actually see how big it is. Why is it not telling me? But it looks huge. I mean, check out Rob's Facebook page. He's put pictures of it. It's just he sent me a video as well on the phone that it just goes on forever, like when he scrolls around. But yeah, why can I not see the size of Lake Balaton? Climate, history, name. So why does it not tell us the size?
I hear it. I'm thinking it's one of those places that changes a lot with depths, the size, because it's actually a bit shallow.
I know a big chunk of it is very, very shallow, and a lot of it's just like pads. I think there's like thousands of acres. It's just unfishable. There's carp that are just never going to come out of there. I do have some stats here, thanks to Wikipedia. It's 48 miles long and 8.7 miles wide. 229 square miles in is the surface area. It's
220. I might have to go and swim that.
229 square miles. Average depth of 10 foot. Max depth is 40 feet. And it's got a lot of water in it.
I bet it has.
Yeah, crazy. The shore length's 147 miles long. 147 miles is like Blackpool to Leicester. So you go from Blackpool all the way down the M6, past through all the roadworks, past Stoke, past the Midlands, past Birmingham, and out the other side to Leicester. That's about 147 miles. It's pretty long. That is a crazy lake. Yeah, you're not doing a walk round, are you? Let's be honest. You just go
no,
for
I'm just
going
to check a couple of margin spots up the other end.
147 miles away. Imagine doing that in a boat, 5 or 6 miles an hour. It'd take you like a month to bow from one end to the other. Imagine rowing it. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But yeah, shout out to Rob Hughes, and unlucky to England. As he said, there's a lot more stuff coming up, and we can spank the home nations. Have you seen anything else on the net, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
No, I'm just having a quick look round at our carp feed, seeing what they've got. We've got 30 things you need to know about the home fen record carp.
Yes, I did read through that, which was fairly interesting. I mean, it's old news now, the home fen carp being caught, or Captain Jack being caught over the record weight and not claimed by a guy that couldn't be bothered with all the hassle. But yeah, the biggest fish that went into that lake was 28 pound, and apparently the majority of them were very small that went in, and most of the carp were born in Britain, even though they are of the Israeli strain, which I thought was quite interesting. As I've said many times, I think the stipulation should be drawn between commercial and non-commercial fisheries, you know, natural lakes and commercial lakes. That's where we should draw the line on these sort of situations. The more evidence comes out, you know, like, you know, the bay, if you put fish that are, you know, bred as a fast growing strain, and you put them in a lake and you feed them, which they were in home fen, they had it automatic feeders in there. If you do that, these fish are going to get big. But many syndicates buy fish from fish suppliers, stock them in lakes and feed them. Many lakes do. I've been a member of many syndicates that do that. They feed the fish. Now I think if you're feeding the fish to grow them bigger, it's a commercial fishery whether you like it or not.
And yeah, I was saying, where would you draw the line between commercial and, you know, like a true wild fish? I mean, at one end of the scale, you'll have Bergfield and the Bergfield Common. At the other end, you can have, you know, one of Rob Hale's waters, you know, the one that presumably
Home Fen is your best example of the other end.
And where did you draw the line? It's just so blurred. And as I said to you in the text the other day, size of fish is no longer a measure of a skill or angling achievement, and I think the record should just be abolished. Just go fishing for your own enjoyment. Who cares who's caught what?
Yeah, I agree. Here's a good lake that blurs the lines. You're aware of Grenville?
Yes.
Right, quality lake, quality fishing there. Very well run from what I hear. Fantastic. Now, that lake was stocked from scratch. The owner that bought it, I think he stocked it with 1,000 Simos and 200 Andy Parker fish, which are the pretty linears and fully scaled. Dead Man's up north, their first stocking was these Andy Parker fish.
Yeah.
So it's not a natural lake. It's been stocked commercially with 1,200 fish, I think it was, 1,000 to 1,200 of the other, with the slower growers and 1,000 Simos, which were fast growers, as it is. There's a load of 50s in there now. There's quite a few 50s in there. He's obviously done it well, but obviously it was commercially stocked, and those fish are fed. The owner has an area, there's a couple of swims that you can rent out as holiday, like holiday type fishing. And he feeds those fish large quantities of bait from the boat a number of times a week. So, and yeah, it's got a lot of good anglers on there. The lake's nearly 100 acres, you know. It's I'm not saying it's an easy lake to fish, it's well stocked, but you know, it's a challenge. You need to be a good angler, I think, to catch, and a lot of good anglers have caught on there. But it, you know, it's a lake that was commercially stocked for revenue, and the fish are fed. And yet, it's about as proper a lake in anybody's eyes as you would ever imagine.
Yeah, I said the blinds are just so blurred.
The blinds are blurred.
The blinds are blurred. The lines are blurred. I'm blind. But I'll tell you what, just as you were saying that, if anyone heard a little bong, I've been tangling a post on Facebook that's just popped up on my page from Dave Martin. He's fishing down in Gloucester, and there's a festival in the next field, and the band on are playing Metallica covers. Dave, stop fishing, go and join, start a mosh pit over there.
fair enough. Yep. So moving on, there's a lot of stuff to get through here. Something I wanted to bring up a little while ago, and maybe we should get people with more qualified opinions than us on this, but I forgot to bring it up, and it's on a little list that I made here. Danny Fairbrass did a live stream from a lake a little while back. I forget which one or where it was. It was on one of the like news type forums. I watched some of this. I really disagreed with something that he said during that, and it was to do with shelf life boilies. Now, he mentioned that shelf life boilies are banned on his lakes, on all the lakes he has to do with. I presume the Embryo Lakes, definitely Gigantica. And so, basically, somebody asked a question of why isn't the cell, mainline cell, why is it not available in the shelf life? Now, I know through Nash and speaking to various other people, the stabilized versions of the baits that they do far outsell the freezer versions these days. More people than ever are using stabilized baits. Now, there's a stigma with the old shelf lives, because they used to have chemicals and preservatives in. You could smell it and taste it. You know, the early shelf life baits were horrible, and I presume they weren't good for the fish either. So I understand why there's some stigma. I have noticed that mainline don't do a shelf life bait. Have you noticed that?
They do.
Oh, go on.
Do the high impact range. We've got them in the shop at work, and yes, we do sell quite a lot of those. And I know they're ready-made off the shelf, but we do also sell a hell of a lot of sell out the freezer. And
well,
why they don't do, this is just my uninformed opinion, but I would say there's probably some ingredients in the cell that are vital to the bait's effectiveness that can't be put in ready-made. They're probably that volatile or active.
yeah, you're right. Mainline baits have been very active over the years, you know, including the one called Activate, which was a fantastic bait. I used it a lot when I was younger, in the 90s, late 90s and 2000s. It was a great bait. But if you remember, most mainline baits, they used to go off in like a day. they used to get this like white sort of, I don't know, it was some sort of reaction, and I believe it was deliberate. Maybe they discovered it by accident, but they've certainly stuck with it over the years. And, you know, to the point of, I know some anglers that would take their bait out the freezer and let it go white before they even went fishing. But it'd certainly, you know, it'd certainly get this white coat in within a day or two of being out the freezer anyway. And Danny made the comment that, you know, that's why a lot of the mainline baits work, including the cell. You know, they work when all these enzymes and whatever, this active stuff in them, starts coming out, which is, and that's why they don't do a shelf life version of it. Fair enough, fair comment, and it works better in a freezer bait, great. But he then went on to say how bad shelf life baits are by all companies, and they should be banned, and they are banned on his lake. And he basically said that, you know, no shelf life baits are good, and I take great exception to that. There was a couple of people kissing his ass in the comments underneath. Well said, Danny. Yep, it's bad for fishing, should be banned, you know, all the typical people that know less than you and I, you know, having an opinion. And there was a couple of people that called him out, went utter bullshit. And so I would like, I know how Nash do their stabilized baits. I can't speak for anyone else, but I've had this conversation with a lot of people who know about bait. And, you know, they basically, the way they get the shelf life is by no preservatives, no additives. They just replace a couple of the most volatile ingredients, such as the egg. But, you know, Basie told me that you can even have a little bit of egg in there at a certain level, you know, of proper egg, and not have the bait go off, assuming you know, dry it a bit. But I know they use egg substitutes, powdered egg and stuff. And I know the Nash stuff in particular is, you know, the volatile ingredients are replaced. They use dryers, you know, they have drying rooms, they dry them out. And if you notice, the normal bait doesn't go off very easily, the Nash stuff, it never has done, because of the process they use with the boiling, the drying rooms, you know, and the way everything's packaged. But, you know, you take a bag of Scopex squid that you could probably leave in the back of your car for a week or two, the freezer bait, you get some moisture in that bag, it's gone off in 2 or 3 days, same as any other bait. So all they try and do is to remove as much as the moisture as possible. And I've spoke with other people that make stabilized baits, and you know, and they completely agree exactly the same thing. So I don't know if Danny was he's just got that old school mentality, because that's kind of how it was when shelf lives were bad. But I don't know, I really took exception with that. And we will get Danny back on, and I'm going to have this one out with him, I think. But you got anything to add to that?
Yeah, definitely. I kind of agree with you, and I agree with Danny as well. And that, obviously, working in the tackle shop, I see a lot of baits in different brands and varieties. And now, I'll probably get sacked for saying this, but off-the-shelf boilies, I'd probably trust about 20% of them. Mm-hmm. And the rest I'd class as the ones that Danny's talking about as utter garbage and probably bad for the fish. Because they are just, you know, cheap rolled crap. You know, occasionally when a bag split or some of the cheaper stuff, you know, we get to have a feel of them. We had some a while back, actually dropped in a glass of water just to see, you know, what happened. Would it go off? Would it break down? It rotted.
Yeah.
It rotted, and I threw it away, and it nearly made me throw up.
This is
the stench of it.
This is
one other thing I did. If I run a lake, I would ban ready-made boilies for that reason.
Really?
Because, yeah, whereas a lot of people would come with, I don't know, a bag of ready-made Scopex squid, or, you know, what's the other one we got at CC Moore's Pacific Tuna we sell a lot of, and a couple of others. But people are going to turn up with a bag of, you know, the Tutti Frutti's or whatever else is nice and bright and smells nice to us. But it's just no good for the fish, and if I had a lake, my fish would be paramount. I would want people to be throwing quality food at them.
Yeah, fair also enough.
On bait boats and drones.
That was one of the comments that Danny made about these baits, just you know, that they don't go off, so they just sit on the bottom. And I don't know. And I'd like to speak to somebody. I don't feel qualified enough to know about this. I know what I've been told by people like Basie, and I know.
I'll tell you the man to speak to about that sort of thing. Rob Hales, next time you speak to him. Because I believe it was a few years back when they drained the monument and there was just mounds of rotting bait, from what I hear.
Yep.
So that might be an interesting opinion.
Yes, good point. Something else to tell you about. We've supported the Carp After Combat. Are you aware of Carp After Combat, Mark?
I am. I've seen the pop on my Facebook feed every now and then. Is that the one with Jim Davidson involved?
Yeah, Jim Davidson's involved. Yeah. He has a charity called Care After Combat, which is looking after the people that have been in the forces and are struggling with being a civvy. Maybe they've got problems, PTSD, maybe they've ended up in jail, stuff like that. They're supporting. And there's a branch, David Coates is one of the important guys in that. We have mentioned him before. I think we've had David on as well, actually. But they're basically providing carp equipment, providing carp events for these guys that are into fishing, or maybe they don't know they're into fishing, but they get into fishing. But basically people have had troubled lives after they've come out of the army. A lot of the industry has got behind Carp After Combat. I know Bev Clifford's been involved. I know Rob Hughes is he honorary president or something? There's quite a lot of people involved in it. And Jim Davidson is part of his Care After Combat charity. Anyway, they have a few events. They've got one coming up north at Clearwater soon. David asked me if I would DJ at or do some hosting or whatever at the Christmas Extravaganza, which is in deepest, darkest Essex. It's at Orsett Hall in Orsett in Essex, and it's although it's called the Christmas Extravaganza, it's on the 11th of November. Now, I'm not going to DJ. I've not got any equipment anymore. They can probably get somebody who's a more current DJ to do a better job than I could do now. I'd have to hire all equipment for probably less than the equipment, less than the cost of me to hire the equipment. They'd probably get a guy that actually knows what he's doing. But I am going to attend. I might do a little bit of MC hosting the type stuff as well. There's cabaret on at the night. Jim Davidson's doing a set nice and early. And there's another comedian I used to work with a lot when he used to do all the clubs many, many years ago, a guy called Jimmy Jones, who's a very funny comedian. Tickets are £50, or you can book a table of 10. It's £500. Now, I was telling me the idea if any Carpcast guys guys and girls want to support this Carp After Combat and have a decent night out on the Lash, I'm going to be there. I was considering taking a table of 10. It'll be £50 a person. If there's enough interest, I'll book a table. I'm going to be there anyway, so yeah, if you fancy supporting, if you maybe thought about going, didn't have anyone to go with, then why not get a few Carpcast listeners involved. So if you are interested, it's the 11th of November. You can book a ticket yourself if you want to go with your missus or something like that, just have a night out. If you would like to do that, by all means go and do it. But if you fancy sat on the table with us, I don't know really who fancies going, Mark, is that your big toe kicking your mic again?
No, that was my thumb that time.
But if you fancy it, if there's enough interest, if there's a few people that want to do it, then I'll commit to a table and we can all have a few beers and have a bit of a night out, a bit of a Christmas extravaganza.
That does sound rather tempting, if I'm honest.
Yeah, if you fancy it. There'll be a lot of people from the industry there as well. Obviously, Rob Hughes will be there, and I'm guessing Bev, she's done a lot of stuff with it. So, yeah, I'm sure Carp Talk or whatever will have a table. I think there's 6 or 7 tables left.
Is it a dress code?
It doesn't say. A lot of when I used to sort of gig at a lot of these events years ago, they were black tie, but this one doesn't actually say anything about black ties, which is good because I don't want to be hiring suits and stuff because I'll look normal for the night. I don't really want to do that. But yeah, if you fancy it, fire us over a message. We'll need to take a payment off you. It's 50 quid a person. Obviously I'll be throwing my 50 notes in there and offering my services for, I think I've been advertised as a DJ, but I'm not going to do that. I'll just do some introducing and stuff. But yeah, it's a fundraiser, all in aid of a good cause. And obviously the Carp After Combat guys, they're doing quite a lot. So if we can support them, have a night out in the middle of it, then happy days. They do have an event coming up soon as well, which is at Clearwater Fisheries up north. The date of which,
what was that?
Up north, that's what the northerners say, isn't it? I'm a northerner. So it's on the 20th of October, so it's next month, at the Clearwater Fisheries, so clearwaterfisheries.co.uk for more info about the fishery. Did you see, Mark, something else on the net and talking about Clearwater? It did a very large fish this week. Did you notice?
Did a badass looking 40 pound common, I did.
It did a 40 pound common. It's a new 40. It was weighed and witnessed by the bailiffs and stuff, and down there Ben got some fantastic pictures of it. It's the second biggest common. It's not the biggest common in the lake. There's another fish called Black Eye that's always a little bit bigger, that's not been out for a little while. It just shows, since they stripped all the small fish out of there, since they're managing the fishery properly, and the fish are piling on the weight. I'm really interested to see how big Black Eye is, because that's normally a few pound bigger, and this is the third biggest fish in the lake, and it's made 40 pounds. So for, you know, on the border of the Lake District, it's about as northwest as it's, you know, it's the furthest point of the northwest region. It's definitely north. And what a fantastic carp for it. It's an absolute minter as well. Then you've got Black Eye, and then you've got the other mid 40. So what a stock. And this is without the all the fish. Alex has spent like 180 grand on fish, 160 grand or something. He's spent a lot of money on fish anyway, which are in one of the smaller lakes at the back, and they are being dug through and let into the main syndicate. Plus, it's just a fantastic complex. And
It's been a fishing lake for quite a few years before it's taken over. Does it have any winter form in the past? I know there's a lot of changes, but...
Yes, it does. Yeah, my mate Dave, my pal Dave from Blackpool, yeah, he had a couple of really good sessions 2 or 3 years ago in the winter. It fished really well, and he had quite a few of the big ones. He had a few of the 30s, I think. In a session, yeah. So clearwaterfisheries.co.uk is where you can find out more information, or the Clearwater Fisheries Facebook group. Is loads of stuff there. I believe they just selected the people for the Kier Syndicate this year, but there's two fantastic day ticket lakes as well, and it's very worth getting your name down on the list for the future, because it's almost classed as the best fishery in the northwest currently, I think, and without doubt, if there is a rival, they will have been surpassed quite massively by some margin in the very near future. But yeah, if you want to go and check the fisheries out, and again support Carp After Combat, you can do that on the 20th of October. And if you want to go to the Christmas do, you want to sit on a carp cast table, do you fancy that then, Mark? Do you fancy a night out?
It does sound quite tempting. Yeah, I'm not one of the big one for social events, but something like that, I think I could, even down in Essex where people talk funny, I think I could quite enjoy.
Well, if it's 50 quid each, Mark, me and you, then we've got 8 places to sell. If any of you Carpcast guys fancy being one of those places, coming for a night out with me and Mark, then we'll make the effort, will we, Mark? If there's 8 people that want to come with us, then we'll go, shall we?
Yeah, first come, first served. I think this, we're going to share this podcast on like stripper clubs, and all the women will come screaming to join us.
When I played in the Carp Society Supergroup with Lee Jackson and Clive Gibbons and stuff, the venue that was in was in Essex, and there was actually a strip club directly above. So maybe this one will too, I don't know. I've never been to Orsett, is it Orsett Hall? But I don't know. Yeah. So if you fancy a night out with Mark and I, then if eight people say they want to go, then Mark, I'll make sure Mark goes, and I will definitely be there anyway. So, yep, all good. Okay, let's move on. Here in Croatia with two Slovenians, Aliasha and Gašper.
Hello.
Hello. I came across Gašper for the first time last year on Lake Bled in Slovenia. He was introduced to us by Ollie Davis, and we became friends on Facebook, and all I see is massive carp pictures for the last 1 year. Big fish, big fish, big fish. I'm thinking this guy seems to be the man. He seems to be the person that we all need to aspire to in the Balkans. You are you're the Balkan master.
Yes, I hope so.
So, how long have you been fishing? When did you start fishing for carp?
I started fishing with 14 years. When I got 14 years, I started modern carp fishing. I start near my home with small water, because in Slovenia it's not many people 20 years ago fishing, start carp fishing. And I learn all things in my home water. Then I reproduction for many years in some water in all Europe. And then I'm here where I am.
So, I was there was another guy that was with us last night, the Croatian guy, and
yes.
He was. I overheard him say about the carp boom when carp fishing has been around here since maybe 2000.
The carp fishing is booming West Europe in Croatia, Serbia, and Bosnia and Slovenia. It's maybe 2000. Then it's a boom in these countries, and now I think so. It's one of the better fishermen living in this country for competition and carp fishing.
I've noticed that there seems to be I noticed it when I went to Romania a few years ago, and I see it here, is that the competition carp fishing is big, and the anglers are very good. There's prize money, everybody is very good at casting, you know.
Yes, this area Europe, it's very good people for I tell you, for competition carp fishing, because when you see last 10 years, I don't know, in world champion competition, it's this country, it's the first three.
Top three in the world.
In the world. And when you go fishing in some lake in this country, you must learn everything for fishing.
So we're on a lake in Croatia. It's your first time here.
My first time here. It's very nice lake. It's hard because you must work every day, you see. When you don't work, you don't catch a fish. And when you work, and when you're some lucky man, you catch some nice fish.
I've been lucky. I've caught a big fish. But yes, by work you mean feed, put the bait out, spawn. So it's all quite long range fishing on here. I'm fishing 102 meters, you're fishing 120 meters.
120, 50 meters. I try, it's not problem casting 130 meters, but it's problem feeding 4 or 5 days, every day.
Yeah, every half an hour,
Half hour, and a lot of bites you must put into the water, and when come grass carp, then you see what is fishing.
Yeah, I've noticed that. You've had lots and lots of grass carp because you were feeding smaller baits. The grass carp seem to be a problem over here because they eat all the weed.
Yes, they eat all food it, because wheat it stopped growing maybe 5 years ago, and now it's difficult. You must get a good tactic for carp.
I've noticed you seem to be very fortunate in this area with the amount of
lakes, the amount of choice of lakes that you have to go to, and every lake you tell me about. I mean, we're not going to mention the name of any lakes here because you'll have to check out the Balkan Carp trips on, yes, yes. on VIPCarpHolidays.com. We shall be running trips here next year. Gasper and I will be putting a business together. There are so many fantastic lakes here that we're going to be offering UK anglers a chance to fly over, have a very easy holiday, and Gasper or myself will guide you and take you around some of these lakes. So we won't mention the names of the lakes for now, but there seem to be so many lakes, and you say, yes, this one has 4 30-kilo fish. So a 30-kilo fish in UK is like 66 pound. So 32 kilo fish, some of them have, like, we're touching 70 plus, but it's the numbers of fish that seem to be in these lakes. Like, yes, many 25 kilo fish, which is, you know, well over 50 pound. You have a choice of so many lakes with so many big fish. And
Yes, we got to try, found the nicely lake here in this area, because fish grow very fast, and I think so this is one of the best places in Europe for fishing.
It seems to me that the conditions are perfect. The temperatures, you have the cold weather in the winter, but the lakes are a good depth. The way the gravel pits are dug over here, the lake is good, the oxygen is good, the fish are fast growing.
Yes, and you got everything here. You got a nice lake, you got a mountain lake, you got a crazy river, hard river, and I think so now it's what I say, it's a dynamite area for carp fishing.
It's fantastic. And but one thing I've been surprised about is how good all the anglers are. If you've only had a carp fishing boom for 17 years, if it started in 2000, the anglers seem good, and dare I say it, a bit more competent than English anglers. The casting is good, the baiting is good, the rigs are the same as use. So where do you learn all the tactics? Do you YouTube, or do you follow things?
No. I'm
you teach yourself?
I'm teach yourself. I'm alone. I'm like the last, I don't know, last 10 years I go fishing alone. Most time I go fishing alone, because when I go fishing alone I catch the biggest fish, because I try many tactics, many systems, and then you see the result, it's here. I'm your self teacher.
Yeah, self-taught, we say.
Yes.
So, obviously, you catch many big fish. What is your secret?
My secret? I don't know. You know where you come. You see me, and you know what is my secret.
I already know. I'm trying to get you to explain to our listeners, because you do seem to catch more than everybody else that I follow on Facebook, and they seem to be big fish. So is it the location, is it the rigs, is it the bait, is it everything?
It's remember, it's the best, it's location. You must try the location, you must find where carp living, where carp go, where is streets, and usually it's you must get a good bite. When you don't get a good bite, you don't catch a big fish 100%. And when you see in this area, you see a lot of different lakes, and you must get different tactics for fishing.
I've noticed a lot of the rigs seem to be very similar to England, using snowman rigs, using knotless knot rigs. You use the liner liners, the kickers, same as we use. There doesn't seem to be a lot of different. This seems to be more carp.
Maybe it's this lake. It's the same like your lake in England. But when you go fishing in Blade, I got a total different tactic when here. And you know, you must put all The same lake, the same tactic for the lake.
Yes, you live quite close to Bled, maybe 20 minutes a day.
Yes, it's my home water, Bled.
And for those that don't know, we will be including Bled in some of the trips that we make next year. You'll have an option to fish lakes in Slovenia or lakes in Croatia and have maybe 3 days on Bled while you were there. But just tell us about Bled. For me, it's the best lake I've ever seen. What do you think about Bled?
What I think in the Bled, I'm the most happy man because when I living near Bled, maybe fish, it's crazy, it's nice, it's a big one. Now you got maybe four fish up 30 kilo, and you got a very too much young fish who grow very fast. Now it's maybe 10-15 carps up 25 kilo, and we will see. In the lake you got everything, you got a big mirror, long common, linear carps, and it's not usually lake, it's very deep lake, big mountain, the church, the castle. It's amazing lake.
Everything, it's, I mean, sure a lot of you will have seen the photographs, but the we call it the money shot. The money shot is a nice big carp, maybe 20 kilo, with the church or the mountains. Or,
you got everything in the photo. Yes, church, castle, mountain, snow, everything. It's good lake for winter carp fishing. It's the best time. And
is that because it's deep?
People.
Is that because the water is deep?
Yes, it's not normally lake. You see, it's Alpian lake. It's a very high, and the water is very deep. It's 30 meters. It's very clean and cold water. And when you don't know the tactic, many people come and catch nothing, and many people come and catch a nice fish, because it's very nice place now.
And it seems to me that you know everybody when when people come down. Everybody, you know who this person is. So is the carp community, is it quite small, or in the Balkans, do all the good anglers who catch the good fish and fish lake, do they all know each other?
No, a lot of people got a lot of good information, and when you come first time in Bled, you need some information, or very very lucky man you must be. Because it's not too easy catch a fish, because water is very deep. It's not normally you must catch in 70-60 meters deep, and it's hard water, no? It's not easy water, but when you got a good information, good man for guide, you catch 100 post nice fish.
And a good man for the guide might be yourself.
yes, maybe.
More on that later. But it also seems to me that you're quite crazy.
Yes, I'm crazy.
You need to be crazy for a carp angler?
Yes, I like the wild life. I live for fishing, and my wife and my children, this is all I got. And I try everything for people who come in Bled. I try everything for the catch, the nice fish, and he go home happy.
Yes, of course. I mean, when we start doing the trips, we have to make sure everybody gets the photo.
Yes.
The photo with the big fish, the nice mirror, all common, and the church. But
and maybe linear scarp, because it's a lot of linear scarp in Bled.
Yeah, which is unusual.
It's not usual, yes.
Yeah, for the Balkans. So obviously in England we have scaly fish, we have linears, but as soon as we move into the Balkans, a lot of the fish have a few scales at the top, maybe a few by the scale, but by the tail, but usually not many scales. And so it's very rare to find, especially a linear. So why does Bled have these? Where do they come from?
I don't know why. I catch a lot of linears. I need just one for catch. And when I looking, this is very old fish. And now we got maybe some 5-6 new linears, and it's not normally for the lake. It got a 10 linear scarps, and maybe 4 of them it's 34-35 livers up, and this is amazing fish for the lake.
So in Slovenia, close to your house,
yes.
How many good lakes are there where we can take people?
Look, we got many lakes, but we got a lot of different lakes. So when you want a wild carp fishing, then you got maybe 5-6 different lakes, very very nice lakes, with nice people, nice big carps, and I hope so. People, you come and see.
Yes, and then there seems to be in Croatia, which is you can fly direct to Zagreb, but which is, will be the nearest airport. But there seems to be a lot of lakes with a lot of fish, where you can catch many fish if you work hard.
Yes, in this area. In this area, in near Zagreb, got a lot of gravel pits. But you must know, when you don't work in this lake, you don't catch nothing, because people coming here fishing, and you must try everything for the carp when you want catch someone nice carp.
One thing I like about this type of fishing is the social side of it. We're sat out in the sun every day, we're drinking beers, we have barbecues, we have the nice food. There seems to be a lot, in this part of the world, seems to be a lot of meat and meat, bread, cheese.
Yes. In this area, the name is Balkan. People want to eat the meat, and here it's in the middle number one. You see, every day we eat the meat, and we like maybe some wild meat, and it's good, Jimmy.
You gave me this sausage that you made yourself, but it's not a sausage like we would have in England. Tell me what this sausage is. Tell me how it is.
This sausage is wild boar.
Wild boar.
Wild boar, yes, because I'm hunter and my father is hunting. I tell, I'm wild man, and I like when it's winter, when it's all lake frozen. I go into the forest, and this sausage is homemade sausage, wild boar, and I think so. Jamie is the best sausage in the life.
It's yes. Well, anybody who comes on a trip with us, we'll promise you a taste of this sausage. The sausage is, I mean, it looks like a sausage because it is wrapped in like a skin, but the meat is not like a sausage. Inside, it tastes to me something more like rich chorizo or something. You ever have a Spanish chorizo?
No.
It tastes similar to that. It's very, very weird, but yeah, very nice. So, in England, not many people hunt. It's very hard to get a hunting license, and there are not many wild places you can just go with a gun and hunt. So, is it quite common in Croatia, Slovenia, the hunting?
In Slovenia and Croatia, it's different. When you want go to hunting, you must go to school, you must go work some different work. And when you work 3-4 years, you must working for this club, and then you get the license, and when you get the license, then you are a hunter.
And can you hunt anywhere?
No, just in this territory.
Special hunting areas.
Special territory. It's hard, because in Slovenia it's many hunter clubs, and you must go shooting in this area. And look, when you're good hunter, it's not problem killing some good animal, but I don't like killing animal. I like go to wood, looking the animals, and when you must kill some animals for it, you kill them.
So is it like fishing, where you join a club because you want to
fish a certain lake? I tell you, carp fishing, it's for me, it's the life. I'm living for this. I start
I started when I got 14 years ago, and I started hunting when I got 18 years ago, and I living for natural, for wild natural, and this.
For the outdoors.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why we all love it. I mean, you feel closer to nature. So, going back to the carp, I mean, what is the favorite fish you've caught? What is the fish that means the most to you?
I don't know, because I catch a lot of fish, but maybe it's my favorite fish, it's a scarface fish.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Black Legend fish. And I catch 2011 with 26.5, and I think so before when I fish die, it's maybe 40 years store.
40 years old. The fish.
40 years old the fish, yes, because I got the first photo with this fish 99 with 20 kilo, and it's for me it's the most important fish in the blade, and I got a very I'm lucky man because I catch him.
Is it a Bled Legend?
Yes, it's Bled Legend, and it's amazing because this fish catch just home fishermen, just Slovenian fishermen.
Nobody
Italian people, nobody, just Slovenian fishermen catch this fish, and I think so. It's nice history, you know, and it's. I think so. Now got some new fish, and Legend is here. It's the new.
One thing about Bled, with it being deep and with it being so big and it's beautiful and everything, it has some mystery as well. And you were telling me about a fish the other day that has only ever been caught four times and always from the woods, from the same area.
Yes. We got one old common carp. He named it Orca, and I got just four photo in last 8-9 years, and my friend Aljash brother catch one time with 26 kilo. It's amazing fish, and he living in just this area in the forest. It's the hardest fish for catch in the lake.
You showed me a picture of it, and to describe it, its mouth is like a letterbox. It's very, very narrow, maybe the width of two fingers.
Yes.
If you hold two fingers together, and it has the biggest, fattest, rubberiest lips I have ever seen. And I understand why it never gets caught, because I don't think it can open its mouth wider than the two fingers. It's just like a long slit in its mouth. And you've seen this fish feed?
I see. Yes. I don't know, 2013, I come in the forest. When I see the first time Ollie Davis, and they're looking under the trees, and I see very big common carp, and I tell him with my friends, we put the system and feeding some boilies, and they're looking at the fish, and maybe 5 minutes later fish come back and go with the system, and it's amazing run. It's maybe I don't know, 800, 900 meters, go, and run, drive, 45 minutes, and when I suck this fish, when I see, it's amazing common carp. For me, it's one of the nicely fish in the lake.
So if there's fish like that in Bled, do you think there are other fish that never get caught by fishermen? There are fish swimming about that just...
I don't know, because when I looking some photo, I see maybe some years, 3-4 years, nobody catch some fish. And then fish catch. Bled is it's specific water. It's very deep, and you never know what you catch. Because you maybe you catch 3-4 years ago some fish with 15 kilo, and you don't put ice for this fish, and then grow very fast in 2-3-4 years, grow for 10-15 kilo, and it's maybe now 30 kilo, and nobody knows this fish.
It's that's the thing, is in England the weights move very slowly, so even if a fish doesn't get caught for 5 years, it's maybe four pounds, 2 kilos bigger than the last time, so it looks very similar. If you over here, you can have a fish that maybe doubles in weight in five years.
I got a very nice story. I catch one very nice common carp with 29.3 kilo, and he stay 4 years. He stay with 21 kilos, and then in 2 years he grow 12 kilos. 2 years and a half, he grow 12 kilos, and I catch with 29.6, and then my friend catch with 32.4 kilo. But this fish is die. But we got some new fish who coming, and I think it's many fish now. The similar this fish in the lake.
And what is your biggest fish from the Balkans?
In the Balkan.
In the whole area. Yeah.
In the Balkan, it's the biggest fish. It's 29.6. This fish from Bled. I got my record. It's 30 kilo plus. I catch in Rainbow Lake 2012. I got just one time because for me it's amazing lake. I must looking one time. And I catch a lot of carp in all lakes, 25 kilo plus.
Yeah, it seems to me that 25 kilo it is. In England, we all try to catch a 40 pounder.
Bigger is. And it's the 60 libras plus.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe 7 different water when I catch 60 libras plus fish.
Yeah, so 25 kilo is the benchmark. Over here, which is 55 pounds, 56 pounds maybe, that seems to be the sort of the one where people take notice. Have you ever wanted to fish in England?
No, I don't go fishing, but
maybe you fancy it one day.
Yes, maybe I try next year.
Yeah,
one time I might go, because I knew some new people, good friends, and I must go one time, go looking in England. When you come in my area, now I must go looking here.
Do people in this area, are they aware of the carp scene in England? Do they know about English carp fishing?
Yes.
What do you ask?
What you ask?
So how well known is the English carp scene over here? Have you heard of Terry Hearn, Ali Hamidi, Danny Fairbrass?
Yes, I know everybody, yes. I know Briggs, I know Nash, I know Ollie Davis, I know Alan Blair, I know Ali Hamidi, I know Jamie Closey. I know a lot of English people, because when I'm young, I'm looking the magazines, and my favorite fisherman is still Briggs. I don't know why. Because when I'm younger, I'm looking at the picture, and he inspired me for this, and it's amazing.
Yes, Steve Briggs inspired me for all the European angling as well since I was young, and it's only in the last 2 years that I'm actually doing it. Steve Briggs was just down the road, wasn't he, last week? Very, very close to where we are now.
Yes. He go in my lake. He go fishing and he try catch some nice fish, and he see it's not easy catch the fish, but he come and he catch some nice fish.
Yes, Briggsy, I think he has caught 50 pound fish from 11
different
countries now.
Yes. He's the legend. He is old man. He's a legend. He living for carp fishing, and
yes. And he's an absolutely lovely fella. We have had him on the Carpcast for interview as well. Yes, he's sat where you are now.
Okay, nice.
Making interview. Yeah, he's a top guy, Briggsy. So what next? What are your ambitions in here? Is there a fish you really want to catch in a lake? Do you want to? What is your next target to hunt fish?
My next target, it's maybe wild lakes, because I got here I looking some
some wild lake and rivers, and I need time because you must put a lot of time in this river and lake when you want to get some nice carps. Because look now, I don't need many carps. I need, when I go fishing, I need the silence. I need the good people. And when it's good people and good, everything is good, then you catch a fish. Mm. And this is perfect for my life.
Yeah, it's a bonus, isn't it? We go fishing because we like.
Yes, because we like. You see, we stay here for days. So, and we are happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had a great time. Rachel has had a good time. She tried to hold a fish yesterday.
Rachel, come back 100%.
Yes, of course. So,
I love this country.
This is the thing that I can't stress enough, and one of the reasons why we are going to do the trips over here. I've been to a lot of countries in the world for holidays and visiting and working all over Europe. But I first came to Croatia a few years ago to a festival. We came to Bled for 2 weeks last year. We drove through many countries to get here. This year we've had a long trip. We've fished in Austria, Croatia, Slovenia, and it is by far the nicest place in Europe I've ever visited. The people are friendly, the weather is great, there are lots of choice of lakes, and the fish are big. And it's for a carp angler who likes being outside, who likes the sun, it is perfect.
Yes, it's perfect. No. I tell you, I'm very happy man, because I'm living in this area, because it's a lot of lakes, a lot of nice people, and a lot of nice fish, because it's important, because when you got sometimes in fishing, you want to catch some big fish.
Of course.
For yourself, and this is this.
Yeah, there is a very good chance of catching fish between 25 kilo and 30 kilo. If you spend a week on the right lakes with the right person guiding you, Gashba, then there is a very good chance you will catch a big fish in this part of the world. And you will always catch fish.
We got some very nice, very nice, very nice lake for people coming here. And when you see, I tell you, you come back 100%, because in all lakes, living carp 30 kilo plus, and a lot of fish up 25 kilo. And this is not usually fish, it's nice, big mirror carps, and he grow. This is important. He don't stay, he grow, because...
That's one thing we haven't mentioned, is the growth rates over here. So we talk in England about fish growing maybe 2 pounds, 1 kilo yes. per year. Over here, to give an example, this lake we are fishing now, it was dug 13 years ago for gravel, as are all the lakes in the area. It has had fish in and water for maybe 10 years.
Yes.
And now there are maybe 125 kilo fish.
Yes, it's amazing. Fish grow very fast, but it's good this area, because some lake it's not deep, it's good weather, it's hot, here got a lot of coming cool waters with some rivers in the lakes, and it's amazing. Carp grow very fast, and maybe you see in Croatia last 2 years catch many carps up 40 kilos, and this some new lakes coming very soon, maybe next year he coming with 40 kilos
with
carps.
New 40 kilo
yes,
fish
yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, just think about that for a minute. It's quite hard. This is what's blown me away about this trip. So this lake has had fish in it for 10 years, and 3 years ago you said there were maybe 20 kilo fish?
Yes, 4 fish up 20 kilo.
And now there are 125 kilo fish 3 years later. That's how fast
very, very fast
fish grow over here. So in 2 more years or 3 more years, there could be 20-30 kilo fish maybe.
Yes. Next year, I tell you, 100 posto next year in the lake, it's in this lake where now we catch, it's maybe 5 to 10 fish up 30 kilo. And you got here a wild common carp with 29.8 kilo and the mirror 32, 31, 30 kilos. And fish, it's young, grow, and this is...
And this lake is not unusual. All the lakes around here are similar, aren't they? The fish grow fast?
Yes, I don't know why, because maybe it's this area, because in England it's very cold. Here it's hot weather in the spring and summer, and in the winter it's cold, and in the lake it's a lot of natural food. And in the lake it's many people coming with good food, with good boilies, with good some things, put into the water and fish grow. He don't put your chip.
So from what I've seen in the last couple of weeks, this area is not yet at its peak. It will be at its best in maybe 2 years' time, and it is already ridiculous. You're saying you've known some fish grow 10 kilos in 1 year?
Yes, it's unbelievable. Two carps growing 10 kilo in 13 months in this lake, and this is not normally. And in 22, when you catch 2 years ago with 12 kilo, last year a fish catch with 22 kilos and he grew 10 kilos in 1 year. This is unbelievable.
10 kilos in 1 year, so that's 22 pounds. That's the kind of growth rates that they're putting. So, yeah, I mean, it blew me away when I was told there was a 125 kilo fish in here, and 3 years ago there was 320 kilo fish. I mean, it's crazy. This area, all I can advise is you need to get on it now. We will be putting the details up for the trips over here very soon. VIPcarpholidays.com. You'll be able to book the Balkan trips on there. Gasper, who is one of the finest anglers in the Balkans, will be on these trips helping you to get the bled shot.
Welcome.
Yes, and I can tell you he's great company. He's a funny guy, he's a bit crazy, he makes excellent food. And he doesn't drink.
People enjoy it. I don't like alcohol, but when I don't drink, I'm very
crazy
man and happy. I don't need.
So yes, more info on that soon. And Gasper, thank you for talking
to
the Carpcast.
Thank you, and we will see you. We will come back.
Definitely. I will be living here very soon.
Okay.
I love the place.
I love you.
Arigato. Thank you also.
Thank you. Ciao, ciao.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So a big thank you to Gasper. I've gone on about Slovenia quite a lot on this episode, but it's truly amazing. Gasper's just come over a little bit at the end there, but he's got a great sense of humour. I hope you could understand the Eastern European accent, but the fishing is totally amazing over there. The interest in the Slovenian trips already has been fantastic. I'm getting an inquiry literally every day at the minute. But the good thing is there is no limit to the amount of people that we can take over there. If we have more people booked than equipment that we've got, then we'll just buy some more equipment. So it's one of those things that is very flexible. We'll work around your flights. There's more info at vipcarpholidays.com. And give me a message, fire it over. But yeah, if you're bored of France, or maybe you haven't been to France that much, it really is next level carp fishing over there. And I keep going on about it, but it's because it's amazing. I'm not just saying it. I've absolutely fell in love with that part of the world, and everybody, there's not a bad word to say about it. Everybody I know that's been is exactly the same. Even Rob Hughes is coming out with us next year. I was chatting with him before. He's going to the lake where I interviewed Gaspar on just now. He's going to that lake for his birthday in October. He's going to go and fish Bled afterwards, and then he's going to come out and do a trip with us next year as well. So yeah, do get in touch. Obviously, if you want to support the Carpcast, you can become a member for like as little as $11.99. Support the show a little bit if you so choose. If not, then keep enjoying the content. Anything to add, Mark, or should we call it a day for this one?
Oh, my stomach's rumbling. I think we're about done this time.
Okay, I did hope to have Elliot Gray as the guest on this week's show. I mentioned it last week. Some people, maybe quite rightly, said that they felt I was a bit negative about the new project, relaunching Carp TV as Sipography. Not negative at all. I may have been slightly disappointed because I wanted more. I wanted him to sell it to me a little bit more, and there was nothing that kind of grabbed it, but I haven't seen it yet. It's launched tomorrow. I think it's launched this weekend anyway. Go and check out Sipography on Facebook, and I shall be getting the first issue, and we'll do a review of it next week. Unfortunately, Elliot, he replied to a couple of messages and then just blanked me for the rest of the week, so that's why he's not on this show. But I will not hold it personally against him, and I really hope the show is fantastic, and I shall be purchasing the first edition to check out what it's all about, because the more content, maybe I'm a miserable old bastard, but the more content, carp fishing content out there, the better. And I'm all for supporting content creators. So, yep. Elliot, I hope it's a raging success, and I shall be purchasing it to have a look. So, we will leave it on that note, Mark. That's it from us.
Yep. Be seeing you.
Be seeing you.
www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.